Hello, homemakers. Welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I'm a wife, mom of four grown kids, and I've been practicing the art of home for over 28 years now. What is a homemaker, you may ask? Well, frankly, anyone who has a home. Whether you're occupied in full-time homemaking or you spend your days working outside of the home, this podcast is here to encourage and inspire your pursuit of practicing the art of home. We have a great episode for you today. I'm talking with my friend Karen Shepherd, who has been a homemaker since 1972. So as you can imagine, this conversation is filled to the brim with stories and ideas and wisdom that can only come from decades of experience. Karen wholeheartedly embraces the theme of this podcast, which is cultivating a place of belonging through homemaking. She has been a placemaker for many people over the years, her husband, her children, both biological and adopted, and grandchildren, as well as many friends and neighbors, have all found a place of welcome and belonging in her home and around her table, a subject which she is very passionate about. We talk a lot about the table in this episode. Karen's homemaking is a testimony to investing in the future by serving, teaching, and loving the next generation in the home. And she's not done yet. Her grandchildren are mostly grown up, but she does look forward to one day welcoming great-grandchildren to this generational table she cultivates in her practice of the art of home. Now, there's a ton of information, resources, ideas, recipes, all kinds of stuff in this interview with Karen, and I'd hate for you to miss any of it. So if you want to get your hands on copies of recipes or links to the resources mentioned, you can find all of that in the show notes and on our website, theartofhomepodcast.com. Also, you can take a peek inside Karen's home. If you want to see what that environment that she's created looks like, you can hop over to the website and click on the blog post for this episode. And this is season one, episode 5, Generational Homemaking with Karen Shepherd. Now, whether you're vacuuming the rugs or bathing the dog, get ready to soak up some wisdom from Karen Shepherd's story of home. All right, Karen, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are today, and then we'll go back to the beginning of your homemaker story after that.
Okay. Well, first of all, I am a daughter of the king, and that's very important. I am the wife of a wonderful husband who treats me like a queen. I'm a mother to 5 kids, ages 31 through, I can't believe this, 47. a grandmother to 14, and their ages 2 through 21. I love to putter in the garden. That's been one of my releases during this time of COVID, and just getting my garden prepared and ready. And I just love the satisfaction of going out and picking my lettuce for the day for a fresh salad, or getting my tomatoes and making, you know, canned tomato sauce for my pasta dishes. When we lived in Vienna about 9 years ago now, Vienna, Austria, I was part of a women's guild, and there were women from all over the world in that class, and it was a quilting class. And I hadn't really done much quilting. I'd done a lot of sewing. I used to sew for my daughters, and when they were little, till they got, you know, old enough to wear, it wasn't cool to wear things that mom sewed. Right. And so I just kind of renewed my interest in sewing and quilting, and it just, I just came back here, and I've made several quilts and done some things with people coming over. And then I took up writing, which I hadn't written really much from high school. I did some writing in high school, but wow, I just didn't have time with all the family responsibilities. And once we became empty nesters, the writing resurfaced, and I became part of a writing group here in the Texas Hill Country. And it has been such a blessing, especially during this COVID time, too, just to be able to write, you know, everything down and have record and for future generations. And let's see, what else? Well, I've been working on a book, and it's going to be published soon, I hope. And it's my mother-in-law's sweet stories of her childhood and how she learned homemaking and life skills while living with various relatives. After her mother died, she was 3 years old when her mom died.
Oh, my.
And so I'm really excited about that, and I want to get this done pretty quickly because she has Alzheimer's now, and she's not in the last stages. She's just really in the beginning stages, and I want to get it done while she's still able to enjoy it.
Of course.
And so that's kind of what I do.
Well, that I remember you telling me about this project.
Mm-hmm.
Having found your mother's, was it her diaries or?
Just her stories. She
wrote them down.
Full of stories. She wrote them when she was in her 60s and 70s.
Wow.
And I don't know how she remembered everything.
That's so amazing
it
that she thought to do that and that you have that tangible thing.
Yeah.
And we definitely need to make sure that we keep connected with you and this project because that's right up the alley of what we're doing here on this podcast.
Yeah.
And I know that our listeners would want to get their hands on that book when it is published.
Yep.
That's
I will let
great.
You know for sure.
Do you have a title yet?
Yes. Just Deal With It.
Just Deal With It?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And this is so funny because we could not come up with a title. We tried and tried. And then we went over to her place one day and I said, you know, could you just help us come up with a title for this book? And she sat there and she went like, paused. And then she said, just deal with it. She said, that's what I've been doing my whole life. Just dealing with it.
She sounds like a really neat lady.
She is. She is.
That's fantastic. Well, okay. So we will go back to the very beginning of your story. Homemaking 101. When did you first become a homemaker?
Well, I guess it was when we got married in 1972.
Mm.
Yep.
Okay.
Been a while.
Yeah.
We turned 20 in December and got married on January 1st. both of our birthdays are in December, so.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
New Year's wedding. That's great.
I would not recommend it.
No? Oh, why not?
Everybody wanted to watch the football game.
Oh,
I don't want to come to a wedding.
Of course, this is the South.
We were even asked, would you like to have a TV in the reception room so people can watch the football game?
Oh, I went, my goodness.
You got to be kidding.
That's really funny. I would not have thought of that. I would have thought it's a holiday. It would be easier for people to travel. Plus, it's the first of the year, and my husband will never forget our anniversary. You know?
Yes, that's true. But you don't get to celebrate it really well because there's not much open on January 1st. Or there is more now, but there didn't used to be.
Interesting. Well, how about when you became the homemaker, you're newly married, what kind of skill set did you have?
Well, you know, I have to go back to my mom.
Yeah.
And she was very obsessive with her cleaning and keeping of the house. It was overly obsessive. And she was very much a perfectionist about how everything needed to be done. And so, therefore, she didn't really teach us. Mm-hmm. I think we caught it.
Yeah.
By watching what she did rather than being taught, you know, that was more the way it was. She stayed home and, you know, with kids, with us, and she, you know, had a meal on the table every evening at 5 o'clock, which was great. She was a wonderful cook, and we never ate out. Oh, I say never, rarely, rarely did we eat out. Mm-hmm. When we did, it was like hamburgers 5 for a dollar or something, you know.
Right.
But anyway, she I don't know, it was really hard. We couldn't make messes in our house. She just couldn't handle messes. So I had a grandmother and she was just this most godly, wonderful person. And they owned a plumbing shop. She and my grandpa owned a plumbing shop, and she had a little room in the back. The plumbing shop was dirty, but the little room was always clean. It was for us to go, and she had a sewing machine back there, and she would sew clothes for us. And she, on her breaks, she would come back, and we would take our little naps there, and she had a little bed on the floor, and she would teach us how to sew, and we could go to her house, and we could cook and we could sew and we could make messes and it was okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm just so thankful for that grandmother
that,
you know.
I think that, I don't know, I've done a few of these interviews now and all of the ladies I've interviewed have grandkids and they all kind of say the same thing. It's different with your grandkids. You know, you're much more willing to just get in there and let them be messy and let them just for the experience, because that's what it's about. You can clean the mess up later.
Yeah.
So
I agree with that. Yeah. It doesn't bother me.
When we're mamas, you know, you're like, I have things to do. You know,
yeah.
I can't be making an extra mess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we could learn something from that.
Well, I'll stick in something I was going to say later, but it fits right now. You know, when our grandkids come and they, every now and then, all of them come not much, just because it's a lot, a lot of people and the kids are getting older now. And when they come, we just don't worry about the house at all. And when they leave, it is bad. It's dirty. It's, you know, you're like, oh, the bathrooms. I try to wipe the bathrooms while they're here, you know, every few days. But but Greg and I usually just take a down day after they leave. And we just do nothing. We just watch movies or, you know, do takeout or whatever before we tackle the house.
Yeah.
Then we tackle the house. And then we find all these, you know, like fingerprints all over the glass doors and dirty socks everywhere stuck. You know, but you know, I tend to leave those fingerprints up for a while. Yeah. I like to look at them and it doesn't bother me a bit.
That's great. I was never, fingerprints on the door did never bother me.
Yeah.
It bothered my husband a lot. It's just one of those things, but I could,
Yeah.
And you're doing it for sentimental reasons because you want to see their little handprints. Yes. I was just like, that's one thing that I can just let go.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So. Okay, well, how about, let's see, learning. So you learned from grandma. Mm-hmm. You've explained that. As a young wife, did you have certain resources you went to? You know, now we have the internet and we can learn anything, but where did you go? Favorite cookbooks or magazines or a friend maybe who influenced you and taught you?
Well, you know, I think... There was a magazine, Good Housekeeping magazine, and we got ideas out of that. I don't know that I had really, I don't remember any friends particularly. We would get together, you know, I would get together with friends and we would do things together in our home, like cooking. We would do meals together.
Oh, like have
that kind of thing.
Like a batch cooking session or something?
Yes, a batch cooking session for make like a month's worth of meals.
Really?
And we've done that a couple of times. And then at Christmas time, there was a group of us who would get together and we would do big batches of cookies. Mm-hmm. Everybody would do their specialty, you know, and we would... pack them into boxes. We would go from 7 in the morning to like 6 in the evening. It was a long day.
That's a long day.
But you learn a lot of things from that type of thing. Different people have different ideas and so it was hard as a young woman, I think.
Did you have your grandmother still living when you once you were married?
I did, but we didn't live close to her, and she wasn't in real great health, and she was tired a lot, and I only got to see her very, very seldom, and you know, she didn't do the phone much. She wrote letters. We got a lot of letters, and she didn't really, you know, give us a lot of advice or anything. She mostly encouraged us that you're doing a great job with those kids, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
she was very encouraging. But yeah, it's different when you don't have the internet.
That has changed. That's been a game changer for people to be able to just look things up. And although you kind of lose something in that because
you do,
then you're not, you know, when I was first married, the internet, it was a thing, but it wasn't like it is today. You know, I got married in 92 and so, we didn't even have a computer at our house.
Yeah.
And if I needed to know something how to do a particular recipe or how to get a stain out of something. And I didn't know, I'd call my mom or my grandma or, you know, somebody who I knew would be able to help me with that.
Right.
And so there's a human element that we've lost in that.
Yeah. And I didn't ever feel comfortable calling my mom and asking her questions. I don't know. We just didn't, you know, have that type of relationship where we did that. But I do remember this once about once or twice a year, there'd be this cooking show that would come to our town. And we would, a friend and I would get tickets and we would go and they would do demonstrations, cooking demonstrations. And we'd get to eat what they cooked and they'd give us tips and that type of thing. It was in the Civic Center. So there were, you know, a lot of people there and won prizes and all that, you know.
Cool.
But yeah.
What was the skill that you really had the steepest learning curve for?
That is a no-brainer. That was budgeting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, budgeting was not our forte. We, neither one of us came into our marriage knowing how to do a budget. But we, that just never was talked about. I don't know why. But because I know my dad didn't make that much money. And so we lived very frugally. And, you know, I kind of carried that frugality over into our marriage. And, but, so we had this, really good friend at church named Joe, and Joe would go out and buy a car. He was our age. He would go out and buy a car and pay cash for it. And we were like, in awe.
How did you do that?
And so finally, one day, we looked at our credit card. We just put stuff on credit cards.
Yeah.
And we didn't pay it off every month. And we didn't realize what the interest rate, how much we were paying in interest. And at one point, we looked and we were paying like $30 in interest a month. And so at that point, we were ready to do something. We had to do something. So we just went to Joe and we said, how do you do this? Well, let me tell you, he had a budget. And he shared that with us. And for 2 years, we stayed on that budget strictly, very much like a Dave Ramsey budget now. But there was no Dave Ramsey back then. And
right,
so,
right.
But I recorded, I had my little book, I carried in my purse, I recorded every single penny I spent. If I bought a pack of gum, I recorded it. The kids knew that if they wanted a pair of shoes or a certain, you know, piece of clothing or something, if the money wasn't in the category, they didn't get it. They'd have to wait till, you know, the next month. So it was really freeing for us. I mean, you think, a lot of people think of a budget as being bondage.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
Not having a budget is bondage. We had we had so many fights, you know, in our marriage over money. And after we did this budget and we were able to get off somewhat and not be quite so strict with it, we never had any more money problems. I mean, and Greg didn't make any more than he did before we got in the budget, but we, and we always had a month left over at the end of, you know, our money.
Instead of,
but then we were just able to, it was just amazing. So yeah, I would highly recommend budgeting for anybody.
That's great. That's budgeting is definitely something we didn't have either when we first got married. And it's a skill that you have to learn and you have to be disciplined, like you were saying. But it, those boundary lines do give you so much more freedom.
You have to get to a place though, where you really want it.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can't just say, would you like me to help you with a budget? You know,
Exactly. Okay. Let's talk about balance for a little bit. Did you ever work outside the home?
Yeah, I worked for about a year right after we got married. We got married the middle of our sophomore year in college, and then I worked until I got pregnant. A year later, and it was just hard. I couldn't work, you know, after that. And, but then, I've had several part-time jobs when the kids were little and different ages. We, I worked for an orthodontist and I was an assistant for him. One of the big benefits of that was that we got, free orthodontic care. So, and he was a wonderful Christian man that we went to church with. And so we were, you know, very close to him and his family. And then I cleaned houses for a while when the girls were a little bit older and I would have to take the kids with me. And so it was kind of hard because I, you know, had to be, make sure they didn't bother anything.
Yeah.
Didn't, you know, I just took stuff for them to do, set, plop them down.
Right. Were they, were you school. Homeschooling?
We
at
did.
That
we
point?
Homeschooled.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you homeschool the whole
time? I homeschooled. I did not do our oldest daughter did it for a year.
Okay.
And then, but she was already in high school when we started homeschooling.
Oh, okay.
And so we homeschooled about 20 years. In total. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but the job, I think, paper route job.
You had a paper route?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was the girls.
Okay.
And at that time, our oldest daughter was 15. Uh-huh. She was about to get her driver's license, but hadn't, you know, gotten it yet. And we needed to take on this. And they wanted to make money. And so this was a good way for them to do it. And so I would get up every morning in Los Alamos, New Mexico, in the snow and cold, and no matter what the weather was, get up and drive them around to deliver papers. We would get up at 4:30 and be out the door by 5. And it was a real growing experience. I mean, the benefits of it was that it got me up and going.
Yeah.
I didn't go back to bed when I got home. But, you know, after she got her driver's license and was able to do it, it was just, oh, my goodness, it was such a relief to not have to do that anymore. But that was quite a character building thing for the kids.
I'm sure.
Me too.
Wow. That would be a tough job.
Yeah.
So do you ever set goals and priorities, you know, let me rephrase that question. How do you set your goals and priorities? Because some people do a weekly goal session. Some people do it annually. Some people do like a 5-year thing. And then they let that sort of inform the way that they're going to schedule every day. So how are you a scheduler? And if so, how do you do that?
I'm a list maker.
Okay.
I have a lot of lists. And, you know, now you can do things on the computer and all that. And I, you know, tend to do both. I still like my paper lists. but, you know, I think we've kind of gotten out of the just specifics of that. We did a lot of that when our kids were younger. And one of the things was this plaque that we wrote these values down, and that was like those were goals for our kids and for us too. I mean, you know, at times I had to look at those.
Right.
And
these are the Shepherd family values.
These are the
I took a picture
family
of.
Values. Okay. Do you mind if I just read them?
No, go ahead. And we're going to post these on the website.
Okay.
Also.
So God is real and he loves us. People are more important than things. We show God we love him by obeying, sharing, giving, and praying. The Bible is our guide in what is good and right. Anything with God is better than everything without him. Doing right is never wrong. And then we had some scripture to go with each of these, and the kids would recite these every night, and I remember one time I was out and one of the girls came up and said, "Mom, there's so-and-so." And I said, I was in a bad mood that day, I guess. I just went, "Well, so what?" or something like that. And she looked at me and she said, "Mom, people are more important than things."
Oh,
and I'm
my
like,
goodness.
Okay, this is a a great reminder.
That is.
But those just really, those were just character builders and, you know, values that really helped our whole family. And at one point, too, Greg and I did something we called vision casting. Mm-hmm. And I guess we do still do that to a degree. Like the other day, we went out into our backfield and we sat and we just looked around and thought about what can we do with this and just started brainstorming, you know, so that it's more that type of thing rather than just a long term, you know?
Yeah. But almost like, I like that vision casting. Mm-hmm. It's like let's dream together.
Yes, and that's exactly.
Yeah.
And it's something you can do with your husband, you know, and it's really fun.
Yeah. Did you ever do that kind of thing with your kids or?
You know, we set a lot of goals. Each of our kids had one thing that they were really became good, proficient in. Mm-hmm. Two of them were swimmers and one was in theater and that type of thing. And we would set goals a lot, especially with swimming. you know, we would help kids set goals. I remember Greg taking the girls. They always look forward to going, and they would go get ice cream, and they would sit and they would talk about the swimming goals, where they wanted to go. And
that's great.
You know, and he just really encouraged them with that.
That's a good intentionality.
Well, when you set those goals, you mostly make those goals. You know, when you don't set them at all, right, you're just kind of out there.
You're just sort of aimlessly wandering.
That's kind of what it is.
All right. Well, what about expectations in homemaking? How did what you experienced in the day-to-day reality match any expectations you might have brought into homemaking?
I think I probably had very unrealistic expectations.
All right. How so? Please elaborate.
Well, I think that, you know, you look at magazines and you hear about these perfect little families in their perfect little homes and all that. And as a young person, you're much more gullible, and you kind of believe that that's the way it's going to be. Well, it wasn't that way for us. We had a hard start. We were both in college, and we had two babies before we were out of graduate school. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it was just really different. And I remember when things came in threes, like, say, just stuff happening during the day that's just, you know, oh my goodness, how could that be? How could that be? And I would just, I'd get stressed and agonized way too much over that. And then I started realizing I've got to understand there are going to be those days.
Right.
You know, and you've just got to learn to deal with them. And
just deal with it. Yeah.
And, you know, you just send up a lot more SOS prayers. You listen to some nice music. You, you know, try to calm yourself. Maybe you take a bath or, you know, and you move on.
Yeah.
And you don't just beat those things to, I mean, just go on and on and on with those, you know,
we call it ruminating in my house. Just let it turn over and over and over in your mind. And then that just makes you angry and bitter and looking for somebody to blame for your circumstance.
And you look at other people and you think, you know, this is nothing compared to what they're going through, you know? Yeah. And so I don't know. It's just, I just think we set our expectations too high sometimes, and we've got to just lower those. I know I've done that with even grandkids, you know, what I expect, because this is the way it was with my grandparents. So I want to be that kind of grandparent, and it doesn't always, it's not always like that. So just learn to lower those expectations, or maybe have no expectations.
Well,
you know?
That's true. So homemaking, it can be a lonely occupation. How did you ever experience loneliness, and how did you deal with that?
Definitely. We lived in Iowa for graduate school, for my husband's graduate school. And that is that's the loneliest place ever. Mm-hmm. We lived like in this little apartment complex with these cornfields surrounding us. You could see forever, and it was cold there. And, you know, it was just, and it was hot in the summer. We had no air conditioning. Oh, I got so lonely. But, you know, I wasn't very good at dealing with it at that time. I remember, I think that was my worst time of depression. I'd never really had depression before, but I just really felt depressed a lot. Mm-hmm. And if it hadn't been for, you know, having a child and putting, you know, pour myself into a child.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think we just, I don't know. But there was also another time later in our marriage, after we, you know, had five kids, that we went through a really difficult time where we felt ostracized from our friends. There was something that happened, and we just came to the conclusion that, and I think God just really dropped this on us. He just let us know that, you know, you got me and you got each other. Mm-hmm. And we just really began to look to God and look to each other. And that's what we just needed to hear that from him. And, you know, it was,
That's so really sweet. I like that message.
And, you know, another thing is having a band of sisters. Mm. Everywhere I've lived, there have been, I've had friends, but in every place that we've lived, I've had one really good friend. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, my husband was traveling overseas to Ukraine and Russia and gone for weeks at a time. And I was dealing with some pretty difficult things with a couple of kids. And, oh, my goodness, I had this one friend and she would come over and we'd lock ourselves in my bedroom mm-hmm. and we would just visit, you know, and because it was just, and she understood, mm-hmm. you know, a good friend that understands what's mm-hmm. going on it's wonderful.
Yeah, we definitely are made for community. We need
yes,
community.
And, we are.
We need those people in our lives yeah. who will help to carry those burdens
yeah.
with us. Yeah. That's great. So did you face any special challenges? You've kind of alluded to some things there in that last question.
Yeah.
How did you manage those?
Well, I think the biggest challenge in my life was the two kids that we adopted. They started out as being foster kids, and we decided we were going to do foster care for a while when our mm-hmm. girls were teenagers. And it was a very difficult decision to adopt them because we hadn't planned to adopt. We just mm-hmm. were going to do foster care for a while, and so we had to change our whole mindset. But they came to us from a home of abuse and neglect and yeah. lack of nurturing. And we went through a lot with those kids. And it was just, they didn't know how to trust. And the more I wanted to love them more, and the more I loved them, the more they pushed back. And yeah. so that was just, probably the biggest challenge of my life. And,
that would have been really difficult as a homemaker because here you've poured your life into making this nurturing, welcoming. Yeah. You know, the tagline of our show is how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. Yeah. And that's exactly what you had done. And then you brought in these two children
yeah.
like here, thrive here, you know, you're safe here. And they just,
my home did not look like my home. Mm. And that was the hardest thing for me. It was full of chaos and pandemonium.
Yeah.
And we had these teams coming in for hours at a time every week for months and years mm-hmm. To try to help the kids learn how to trust and try to help us learn how to parent
yeah.
in a way that we were not accustomed to. And it didn't even feel right, mm-hmm. but it was the only way you could work with these kids.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so those years, those were hard. It was such a relief when they finally left home mm-hmm. and, you know, they couldn't wait to leave home anyway. And so, you know, I knew by 18, when they turned 18, they were going to be out, and they left. And, it was just, man, I was so happy to be just yeah. empty nest and be able to have my home back, you
yeah.
know, and do it like I know God wants me to do it, you yeah. know?
Well, and even that difficult time, we believe that God ordained that for you.
Yes.
And he as hard as it was, he wanted those kids to be there.
There was purpose in it. I know there was purpose in it. And it was just hard at the time to see any purpose in it, you mm-hmm. know.
mm-hmm. Let's move on and talk about hospitality.
Okay.
How would you say that you show hospitality to your own family members, the people who were inside the four walls of your house, by making memories intentionally, maybe some family traditions that you all had?
So memories, you know, I started thinking about that. I looked at that, and I looked at memories and traditions, and I thought, those are kind of the same, but mm-hmm. there is a little difference in them. Some memories are just one-time things, and other memories become traditions. And,
yeah, that's true.
But one of the first memories I remember with after we moved to New Mexico, and it was a really cold winter and there was a lot of snow, and we decided we were going to make a memory. We were going to get in our station wagon, and we were going to go up to the mountains, and we had just moved there. We had no clue what we were getting into. There was a lot of snow up there, but we didn't realize how much snow was going to be up there.
Oh, no.
So we were going to find a Christmas tree.
Oh, boy.
And so we went, the girls had tennis shoes on, and, you know, not heavy coats, and because down further, it was not so bad. It was pretty warm because we're high altitude, and the sun was just really, you know, warming. But up there in that snow and wind, oh my goodness, we'd hardly gotten started, and the girls are going, our feet are frozen. We can't do this anymore.
Oh my goodness.
And they were crying, and it was just awful. And Greg's going ahead, forging ahead, you know, we are going to find a Christmas tree.
This is like, you're like replaying the scene in the Christmas Vacation movie.
Yes.
This is exactly what happened in that movie. Oh,
and
my
so
gosh.
We just kept going, and they were going, we'll take this one. We don't care what it looks like. We'll just take this one, you know. Well, we finally got a Christmas tree, and I had brought hot chocolate and stuff, so we were able to warm up once we got in the car. But they were all crying, and it was like, we never want to do this again.
Oh, boy. You had such good intentions.
But, you know, it's funny because they talk about that so much. That comes up so many times around Christmas time. We talk about, remember that Christmas, you know?
That's hilarious.
But I immediately went to the secondhand store the next day, and I found boots and gloves and coats and, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah.
That's so great.
Another thing was that we had a cave. It was in the Camazon, on the Camazon Trail, which was within walking distance from our house. We lived in one of those government houses, and so we would walk to this area, beautiful, beautiful area, and just very wild, and a lot of canyons and mountains and stuff. And there's a cave there called the Cave of the Winds. And the kids loved going there. It was a pretty good little hike. It took us about an hour to get there. And then they would go down into the cave and, you know, get to just see. They could see where bats were hanging and, you know, just all this stuff. And so, but that was just a really fun memory. And then when our grandkids came along, when they turned 4 or 5 years old, that was like they got to go on that hike.
Oh, fun.
But then, you know, we have a bunch of grandkids who came along after who didn't get to go on that hike. So we keep telling them, we're going to take you back. We're going to do that hike.
Yeah, that's a great tradition.
But that was a fun memory. And just our times. And we did a timeshare, which we couldn't really afford, but we did it anyway because we felt like, okay, we're going to make some memories with this. We're going to take a vacations. And if we didn't have this, we'd never take a vacation. And so we'd go to Pagosa Springs, Colorado, every year. And it a lot of fun memories from that. One time we went on a breakfast ride on horses early in the morning, went out into the middle of nowhere and had breakfast cooked over a fire. And, you know, that was just... I mean, they still talk about these things. And
yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, and as far as food is concerned, that I have to bring in food, like chives bread and orange Jell-O salad and Clark bars and green chili chicken enchiladas. Those are four things. And the first three things we had every holiday dinner. We had those. And after the girls got married, every year somebody would call, I can't find my chives bread recipe. Can you give it to me? Our whole family does chives bread every...
I've never heard of that. What is it?
It's this wonderful bread that it's got chives.
Is it a yeasted bread?
Yeah. It has yeast in it. It's got some cream in it.
Oh,
I mean, it's really yummy. I'll have to give you the recipe.
Will you share that with
yes,
us
I
so
will.
We can share with our listeners?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I will.
We'll put that on the website.
Yeah.
Chives bread.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I did. I won let's see, was it a grand champion ribbon in the county fair for my chives bread.
Oh my goodness. So ladies and gentlemen, that will be the award winning.
Yes.
Karen Shepherd chives bread
yes.
recipe. Thank you.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Definitely.
We'll get back to Karen's story in just a minute. But right now it is time for historical homemaker hints.
This is the part of the podcast where we highlight some helpful and not so helpful hints doled out to homemakers throughout history. For today's hints, we're going to revisit The American Frugal Housewife by Mrs. Child, published in 1833. To remove ink spots from fabric, Mrs. Child suggests the following. If soaked in warm milk before the ink has had a chance to dry, the spot may usually be removed. If it is dried in, rub table salt upon it and drop lemon juice upon the salt. If a lemon cannot be easily procured, vinegar or sorrel juice will answer. White soap diluted with vinegar is likewise a good thing to take out ink spots. So spring is here, and with that comes insects. If you happen to get in the way of a stinging insect, Mrs. Child suggests that a raw onion is an excellent remedy for the stings of a wasp. I did a quick online search, and this is in fact still a common home remedy for stings from all sorts of insects. Most sources recommend chopping or mashing up the onion to extract the maximum amount of juice, which is what apparently helps to diminish the pain of the sting. Now, my great-grandmother used to use tobacco. I spent a lot of time in the summers in Louisiana with my grandmas and my great-grandparents. Most of that time was on the water, and I was usually in a bathing suit running around. And once I got stung on my bum by a wasp, I must probably have been about 7 or 8 years old, but I fondly remember my great-grandmother taking somebody's tobacco and moistening it a little bit, sticking it right on my bum in between my bathing suit and my skin on where the wasp had stung me, and then putting me up in her lap and soothing me and calming me down. And before I knew it, that sting pain was gone. So I can attest to the fact that tobacco works. I haven't tried onions. If you've tried onions and that works for you, maybe send us a note or comment on Instagram. So let's see, what else does Mrs. Child have to say? All right, this is a recipe she has in her book for homemade perfume, or what she calls cologne water. And she's using essential oils, y'all. This was a woman way ahead of her time. Okay, here's her recipe. 1 pint of alcohol, 60 drops of lavender, 60 drops of bergamot, 60 drops essence of lemon, 60 drops of orange water, to be corked up and well shaken. It is better for considerable age. Now, I'm not sure what is the meaning of that last sentence. Does she mean it's going to last a long time, or does she mean it's better for a woman of considerable age to use this particular recipe for cologne water? I don't know. I'm going to let you guys figure that one out. Well, thanks for listening to today's Historical Homemaker Hints. As always, these hints and tips provided in this segment are not intended to advise you on health or any other matters. They are for entertainment purposes only, and I leave it up to you, the listener, to discern the soundness of the advice given. Now let's get back to Karen's story. Well, how about hospitality to others? How did you extend this offer of welcome and belonging to the people who were outside of the four walls of your house?
Well, we invited people over a lot for meals. The table in our house was a big thing. It's always been a big thing, even before it was a big thing, you know?
Right.
But we just love gathering around the table and usually over food. I mean, you know, that's what helps people to relax. Yes. And to just open up. Yeah. And I remember on holidays, there were always these stragglers who didn't have a place to go. Right. And so we would invite them over. And it was really good for the kids.
Did your kids help you when you had people coming over? You know, did they get involved in the preparation for that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. They would set the table. They would, you know, be responsible for one food, you know, a recipe of something.
Right.
They would help clean, you know,
that's
to get
good.
Ready. Because I always felt like I wanted to have a clean house, you know, when we had people over. But, yeah, so it was a family. It was definitely a family thing.
Can you talk a little bit about the turquoise table?
Oh, yes. I love the turquoise table. You see my turquoise table out there?
Oh, I missed it. Yes, I see it now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I hit up on this website just when I was looking, surfing the internet one day, and it's called The Turquoise Table. And it's this woman who, a young woman, she actually lives in Austin, and she decided one day that she was going to put a turquoise table in her front yard and just try to see if she could attract some of the neighbors. Well, she did. I mean, people were walking in front of her house, picking up their kids from the bus and, you know, just walking their animals. And they would stop by. She would have a few little snacks and something to drink. And they would stop by and sit down at her table and visit. Mm-hmm. Their kids would bring their homework and do it at their table. And it just became a real thing. It just spread everywhere. It's even in Europe now. And there are even hospitals, places like that, that have put turquoise tables outside for people to gather. So, it, you know, and she's got a podcast and she's got a website where, you know, she talks about, she interviews different people, kind of like what you do, and talks about ways that they practice hospitality.
Right. So how did that impact you, and were you able to implement any of that?
We have had a lot of people over, just, you know, calling people and saying, hey, you want to just come over and sit outside, that type of thing. Now, I haven't put the turquoise table out front because we don't exactly have a, you know, we have a gate and
you're kind of out in the country.
You have to kind of invite them.
Yeah.
But we even have a church group now that meets on Sunday morning in our, on our back patio, just our neighbors, on our street, people on our street. We put an email out. We agonized over this for a while. We thought, oh, should we do this or not? It was hard to just do that, you know, because we thought, well, what if nobody responds, you know? But 10 people, 10 families That's responded.
And was that in response? You did that because of COVID and not being able to go?
Yes, exactly. And other people weren't able to go either. But then there were some that were unchurched who decided they wanted to come. And so we now have about 5 families who meet regularly. And we've had to do Zoom a couple of times because of the weather, but we're about ready to start back up outside again. And it's been a great way to get to know our neighbors. And
that is such a wonderful idea.
And we don't know what God's going to do with that. I mean, you know, we're waiting to see. We're not stressing about church. We just are waiting to see what is he going to do with this? Because as long as people will come, we're going to.
What do you do for
service? Greg usually will do a Bible study and we have discussion and we will do communion and we don't, you know, we do communion probably more often than once a month. And for a while we were doing it every Sunday. People really liked that. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do that. And so, We did that, and we don't do much singing. It's kind of hard with a small group like that. We would love to sing, but every now and then we play a song, you know, for them to hear. But now we're on talking about people in the Bible and, you know, how we can relate to them in our lives. And so, and different ones are offering to do the study. And this one man last week said, I'll do it next week. Greg didn't even ask him. And so we were just, whoa, okay.
That's great.
But
cool.
Yeah, it really has been good.
I'm excited to see what happens.
And you know what happened when that storm came that week?
The big snowstorm?
Yeah, this group became a support group.
Oh, because you needed each other because we didn't have water.
Some people didn't have water. We had water. Some people didn't have water. You know, we didn't have electricity. And so people would come down here and take showers. Mm-hmm. You know, I had one person I put on there for some neighbors across the street over here that said that they hadn't had any electricity for, you know, days. And I said, well, I've got a pot of soup on the stove. Would y'all like me to bring you some? And then another person who had been coming on Sundays, she called and she said, I saw where you offered that. Do you mind if we come down? And I thought, who does that?
Oh,
you know, but it's all because of this church group that we had.
So
that
great.
Wouldn't have happened had we not had that. So,
I love that story. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. And that's just all about being willing to just have an open home.
Yeah.
Which is scary.
It is scary. And it gets messy sometimes. I mean, it can be messy.
I'm sure.
Depending on who's around.
That's really great. Well, All right. I want to talk just a little bit about the different seasons of homemaking. How would you say that your role has changed as a homemaker over seasons in your life?
Well, I have the same chores. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much the same. I still cook too much food.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to cooking big.
Yep.
But it's good because then we have leftovers. Yep. And I like that. But it is awfully quiet around here. And, you know, I kind of related the story about the grandkids before. And that is, I love having the kids here. Any of them. Mm-hmm. All of them. It doesn't matter. That noise does not bother me at all. It's joyful and it just lifts my spirit. And I'm really excited because we're going to get to have two of our grandsons who are both teenagers. They're probably going to come out the next few days. And
then you will be cooking a lot.
I will be cooking a lot.
Teenage boys.
Yes. And they're going to do some work for us.
Great.
Hauling some rocks. And we got lots of rocks to haul if anybody ever wants their kids to haul rocks.
Okay, you heard that here. Karen has work for your teenage.
If they want to build some muscles, they can do it here.
That's great. Actually, I might send some of mine over. Well, what about transitions? What was the hardest transition for you? I mean, you really talked about how hard Iowa was for you. Was there anything else other than the difficult time with your adopted kids? And
you know, I think the hardest transition, because it's most fresh on my mind for me, has been the emptying out of my grandkids. I didn't know it would go this fast.
Oh.
I know people tell you it's going to go fast, but I mean, we have four in college now.
Wow.
And every year they're going to be emptying out, you mm-hmm. know? And it's, I am just, and once they hit a certain age, they're so busy.
Yeah.
They're in so many activities that they just don't have yeah. the time. They can't get away to come and spend time.
Right, right.
And so that has been so hard for me.
It's like empty nest all over
it
again.
It is.
And I didn't even think about
it
that.
It is. It's really hard. So I just, sometimes I just get really teary-eyed about it. And so I, what I'm doing right now is I'm writing each one of my grandkids and, I'm doing it based on a picture. I'm picking out a picture mm-hmm. that I really like that reminds me of something I did with that grandkid that was really fun and
like a photograph mm-hmm. from that time.
A photograph that, you know, like for instance, our college daughter, granddaughter, we used to celebrate going back to school and I would let her invite a couple of her friends and they would come over and they'd spend Friday night and we would do something fun. We'd either go out to eat or we'd make a meal here and eat. We would have a tea party on Saturday morning. Every time we did it, I mean, every year we did it, we would have a tea party. And the first year I did it, I thought, ooh, I hope they're not going to think this is too little girlish.
Yeah.
But, oh, they loved it. I used my Polish pottery. And, you know, they absolutely loved it. We prayed together. We talked about their school year, how it was going to be, what they, you know, any fears that they had. It was just a really, really great time. Mm. And so I looked forward to that every year. That's over now.
Oh.
You know? And so, but I have a picture.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm gonna write her. I'm gonna tell her what that meant to me.
Yeah,
and what she means to me. And I'm gonna do that with each grandkid. And then I'm gonna send them their letters. And then I'm gonna compile them all in a book. And I'm mm-hmm. gonna give a book to them for Christmas. That maybe not this Christmas. It may be next Christmas. But
yeah.
that has, you know, everybody's in there so that they can see all of them are special to me
yeah.
in some way.
That is such a great idea.
It's
I
a
love
big
that.
Project.
That is,
with 14.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're a writer, and that's just right in your wheelhouse. And,
yeah.
But really, anybody could do that.
Yes, they could.
And you could do that with your kids.
You could.
Or your grandkids.
Yeah.
Or your nieces and nephews
yeah.
if you don't have kids.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic idea. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
All right. Now, right now, you're, you know, in the grandma stage but you're still a homemaker. So how are you still fulfilling your role as a homemaker? We've kind of touched on this, like with this church group and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still growing? How do you challenge yourself to grow? And how are you passing on your knowledge intentionally?
Okay. Well, you know, we got married really early in our life compared to, I think now people are getting married much later.
Definitely.
But we didn't have a lot of time to spend together, just Greg and me. And then we had, it was hard because we were going to school and all that. And so this is a really, really sweet time for us.
Yeah.
Really sweet time. we love being together. We have enough of not being together when he's out in his shop and I'm doing my stuff in my nook, Nana's nook, or I'm in my house, you know, working on things. And then we come together in the evening and, you know, we eat together and we just are, we're able to watch something that's educational or devotional or, you know, that type of thing. And the way I just keep kind of growing and learning is I do a lot of reading and I do a lot of research. I love to research. I got that gene from my grandpa. He was a big researcher. And I like to come up with Bible questions that I can research. And women's Bible classes, conferences, you know, those types of things. I still really try to participate in it when I can in those things. Although, you know, the past year has been a little different. But
as your grandchildren are now getting older, and you said you have some in college?
Yeah, four.
Four in college, which are any of them married yet?
No. Nobody's married yet.
But that's coming.
It's coming. Yeah.
So I imagine you will have opportunities to pour into your granddaughters or your granddaughters-in-law.
Yes.
As a homemaker.
Yeah.
And give some of your knowledge to those girls.
I hope that they'll be interested and want to hear. Sometimes they're not.
Well, you know,
you have to build a relationship.
You
with
do
them
have
first.
To build a relationship because actually, then, when I've talked to people, another lady I interviewed said something similar. She's like, I just don't feel like the interest is there. But then when I've talked to some younger women to poll them about what to ask in these interviews, and they've said, we want to know.
They don't. Yeah.
So I think it's just a matter of making those relationships and having those contacts and then just being intentional, I guess, about, you know, offering the advice, whether they want it or not. I don't know.
I've learned the hard way to not offer advice to my kids.
Okay.
My daughters especially, unless they ask.
Okay.
And then if they ask, you word it very carefully when you answer. That's a really good piece of advice.
That's good to know.
After they, you know, are married and have their own families and
wait for them to ask.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing is God has placed a lot of young people in our lives that our kids' ages are younger than our kids even. And I have a couple of women, young moms that we do FaceTime maybe once a month. This one woman, she'll be on her way to a doctor's appointment. She'll have her two babies in the back seat and she'll call me and we'll talk while she's driving. Or we'll meet for coffee at up here at the Rustic Bean where the kids can play and we can visit. That's a really nice place for, you know, to meet with people. And I love being with those young moms. That's just one of my things. I really love them. And I learn a lot from them. You know, I learn just about as much from them, I'm sure, maybe more than what they learn from me. So it's a mutual thing.
That's good. That's great.
But
all right, so we're going to go into a time of rapid fire, quick answer, just for fun. You don't have to elaborate on these answers, but you can if you want to tell a story or have something to add. So in the area of tasks, homemaking tasks, what is one that you love?
Organization. I love to organize anything. It is therapy.
Okay, good. One you hate?
Cleaning windows.
Oh. Yeah.
And you can actually look and see.
Well, it's hard where we live. It's very dusty here.
I know. It is.
And it's just, you would have to clean them probably every week to keep them spotless.
Yeah.
So, I just ignore it. Like I said before, dirty windows, they don't really bother me all that much. All right. How about a task that you grew to love?
I have racked my brain over that one and I cannot think of anything that, that I really didn't like that I've grown to love.
Okay. Well, fair answer. That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. What about a homemaking fail?
Okay. This is a big one. It was tofu mush.
Oh, no.
Okay. So I decided the week that our daughter was playing Annie at the Light Opera Theater in Los Alamos and having all this mush, you know, that Annie and her friends had to eat, I decided I was going to try tofu for dinner before, you know, the show. And oh, it turned out really bad. We never did tofu again. The kids, I mean, it was like they just wanted to throw up, you know. So we ended up going to get pizza. Nobody was eating the tofu mush, and they still bring that up to me ever so often. So oh,
I'm not a fan of tofu, mushy or not. I'm just not a fan. So what about a memorable homemaking achievement?
Well, I guess I already said that. That was my chives bread.
Your chives bread.
Yeah. Winning that ribbon. Boy, I was shocked. I walked in and saw that big old ribbon. I went, whoa.
When was this? So how far were you into your homemaking journey?
That was in New Mexico, probably maybe 20 years or so. Yeah.
So you'd had some practice.
Something.
And, yeah.
Like that, maybe. Oh, no, it was even younger. It was less than that. It was probably 15. Yeah, okay. 15 years. Yeah, yeah. And the only complaint they had was that I didn't chop the chives up fine enough. They would have liked to have seen those chives chopped up really fine. So
interesting. That's a great achievement.
Yeah.
Do you still have the ribbon?
I do. It's in the memory box.
All right. Awesome. Did you write a story to go with the ribbon?
No.
You need to do that.
I should do that. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
All right. The last thing I want to talk about is some reflection on the art of home. That's the title of this podcast. We want to continue to reiterate that homemaking is an art, and it's just like any other art form. You have to practice. You're not just born knowing how to do it. And it requires discipline to keep up your practice and know that you got to make a lot of mistakes in order to get good at it. So how do you think that homemaking is an art?
Well, I think it takes a lot of creativity. Maybe not a lot, but you do have to be somewhat creative at times. You know, I mean, there are times when you don't have all the ingredients you need for something. Mm-hmm. Well, it would be good if you could figure out a creative way to substitute or you know, use something else. And this kind of ties into frugality too, you know, somewhat. But there's a story. I'm not sure it really relates, but I'll tell it really quickly about creativity with the kids, my friend, her kids, me and my kids. And we lived in a neighborhood. There were no fences. We spent a lot of time with each other and got together in the yards, let the kids play. And the kids were out a lot. And there were these dogs that were roaming the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they were in heat. And we were scared to death that they were going to, you know, get the kids somehow, affect them. And so we called the animal control. And they just said they couldn't come and round them up and all that. So my friend and I decided we became very creative. And she went in and got a piece of meat out of her freezer. Yeah. And I drove and another woman kept our kids, and another woman who had a fence. My friend had the meat out the window, and the dogs were all following
our car. Goodness.
We led them right into the fence and closed
the gate.
And we called the animal control and said, "We have gathered them up. Come and get them."
Oh, wow. That is fantastic.
So I don't know how we came up with that idea.
That's teamwork and creativity and bravery. Yes.
And Greg said, "Did you ever think about how dangerous that was?" And I said, "No, not really. We just were thinking about our kids, you know."
Well, yeah.
And so.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. I'm glad you told that story. That's fantastic. How can homemakers find beauty in the midst of work that can feel mundane and monotonous?
Oh, can I go back to really to that art? How is homemaking art? Because I had one more thing. I feel like that creativity and homemaking allow us to express our individual tastes. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel sometimes like things are mundane and things are not, you know, they're... so simple. We lived a simple life. But you know, when you think about it, we can express ourselves in our homes,
sure,
through our tastes, and just like most arts, it may not come naturally, mm-hmm. but it can be learned.
Yeah.
And so I think that's important to know, because people that go into a marriage thinking, I can't do this, mm-hmm. you can learn to do it.
Yes.
And so I just want to make sure to get that point across.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Absolutely. But, okay. So how would you say that homemakers could find beauty in this occupation that can be not beautiful? It can be mundane and monotonous. And where can we find beauty?
Well, I can say that especially our role does appear to in society. Society makes it look mundane and monotonous a lot of times. And
not attractive.
But yeah. But in God's eyes, mm-hmm. it's not. It's very, you know, very much part of his plan for us to be doing this. And I think about, at this time, I think about how that we can have beauty in our home. We can have things on our walls that encourage us and encourage others. And we can spend time reflecting, you know, just when I sit in my dining room, sometimes I'll just look up and, you know, I might be discouraged or something, and or I might be too busy. Be still and know that I am God.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that helps remind me mm-hmm. who I am and what I need to be doing.
Well, there's a scripture about that in Deuteronomy. It's talking about the word. Is it up there? Right there on the wall. Well, no, I'm talking about the one, I think it's in Deuteronomy 6. Okay, I'm going to have to go.
6 through 9.
Where he says, you know, write it on the doorpost of your house.
And I have that scripture written down, actually.
Yeah.
And that's true. And
do you have it right there?
I sure do. I can read it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you share that with us?
Okay. 6 through 9. It says, these words that I'm giving you today are to be in your heart. Repeat them to your children. Talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Bind them as a sign on your hand and let them be a symbol on your forehead. Write them on the doorposts of your house and on your city gates. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I also love that that is so simple. That is a very mundane. When you sit and you walk and you sleep and you get up, that's mundane things.
Right.
And very simple. And so, you know,
and that's what God does, is he enters into just the everyday world of dirt and dust and laundry suds and crying babies. And he enters into that and gives us peace when we need it. So,
yeah,
that's great. Yeah. I love, I got a little tour before we started recording, and I loved all the things. You have so much art on your walls, and I'm a little distracted actually right now looking at all this fun stuff because of all your travels. And you guys have quite a wonderful and eclectic collection, and that's mm-hmm. my favorite kind.
Yeah.
So I imagine it also brings back really fond memories for you.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
Especially like your family wall, your family picture wall that you were showing me.
Yes.
Well, you have two. You have the black and white family picture wall.
Yeah.
And then you have with your kids.
Yeah. Different generations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's great.
Yep.
So in what ways do homemakers cultivate a sense of place and belonging in their home?
Well, we always emphasized to our kids that we treat guests with respect and dignity, and we also do that with each other in our family. Now, there are going to be times when you're upset with each other and you say things you wish you hadn't said, and you have to, you know, ask for forgiveness. And mm-hmm. I don't think I was very good at that in part of my marriage. I think I've gotten better at that, but I don't think I was very good at that in the beginning. But I think it's really important mm-hmm. to ask for forgiveness. And if you said something that was said in a moment of heat and not, you know, you didn't think about it before you said it.
Right.
You would do that with a friend.
Absolutely.
Why would you not do that with your family? You know?
Yes.
So, and regular times around the table. We always had dinner together, mm-hmm. and it was different back then than it is now. Kids are just running off to all these practices and everything, mm-hmm. and it's hard to find a time to be around a table. But that was a really important time. And I remember Greg would carefully craft these questions that he would ask the kids during our meal time about what happened in their life that day. And it wouldn't be an answer like, you know,
yes,
monosyllable.
No. Not
yeah.
a yes or no
yeah.
answer.
It would, mm-hmm. it would have to be some words. They would mm-hmm. have to say some words to answer yeah. it. And so there are ways to do that. And that's a really important time. The table is such a mm-hmm. a great, I love the table. I can't talk enough about that. We also encouraged our kids to engage guests. Okay. We didn't expect them to go off in another room
yeah.
when we had company. We encouraged our guests to interact with our kids. Mm-hmm. And so they grew up feeling comfortable with adults. And I know many times somebody might say to us, wow, you know, they just looked us in the eye when we were talking to them. And,
yeah.
But they learned how to do that at a young age.
Right.
And I think we can encourage our kids in that way. And
yeah.
it's a good way.
It's a good skill
yeah.
for your kids to learn.
Yeah.
Absolutely. How is the occupation of homemaking valuable? We know it's valuable to us in our home, but how about society as a whole? How do you see it as a value to society?
Well, I think it keeps the home fires burning. Mm-hmm. It provides security, comfort, and belonging to our kids. And I love this. I was talking to Greg last night, and we just kind of came up with this, and I'll have to read it. But
yeah,
it's the word homemaking implies creation and maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
A place, and that can be physical or emotional,
right.
A place where members of a family want to return.
Yeah.
And I think if your kids want to come home, you know, they feel security
mm-hmm.
In their home. It's, yeah.
And you're seeing that now over multiple generations with your grandchildren.
Yep. Yep.
The home that you create here affects not just your kids, but
right.
their children.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, if God wills for you to see it, they're your great grandchildren.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I can't wait for my great grandchildren because it'll be starting over again. And
yeah.
I'm so excited.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the questions that I have for you. Was there anything else you wanted to share or any parting words or advice that you'd like to give?
You know, there was a couple of things here that I guess went with the cultivating a sense of place and belonging. And,
uh-huh.
and this was commitments we made to our kids. And we told them at a very early age, whenever their parents were going through divorces and that type of thing, we said, you will never have to choose between which parent to live with mm-hmm. because your mom and I, he would tell them, your mom and I have committed. Mm-hmm. We've made this commitment once, and this is
yeah
for life. And so, and then another one was going to church.
Mm-hmm.
We made that decision once,
mm-hmm.
so they didn't never had to wake up on Sunday morning and wonder, "Are we going to church today?" It was just something we did as
yeah.
a family, and there was no ongoing discussion. But I think it's important to have certain things that you give your kids and you make them feel that secure in these relationships that it's going to be like this.
Right.
And I don't know. I just really like that
yeah.
idea.
That's great.
But thank you so much. This has been fun.
Well,
I really enjoyed it.
It has been my pleasure and I loved hearing your story.
Loved it.
Thank you for sharing with us. And I'm looking forward to the chives bread.
Yes, I will give you that recipe. Definitely.
But before we close, we will include that on the website. And we also want to include information about how to get in touch with you so we can keep up with when your book gets published and how can people find you online.
Okay, so my my site is Karen Young Shepherd. And do I need to spell that?
We'll spell it out on the website. Yeah, it'll actually be in the show notes. It'll be in the notes below.
Okay, .com. Karen Young Shepherd. That's actually my blog. And, you know, I used to be a little better with the blogging. You can go back and look at some of my previous stuff. I haven't done a lot recently, but it will be coming back again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be working on this book. And I have another book that I'm thinking about. And, after I finish this one. And so I will have an author's page and, you know, you can see when these books come out.
Great. Fantastic.
But,
well, we're looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for spending some time with us today, listening to Karen's story of home. We hope that you're leaving here inspired and encouraged and remembering that the work you do at home, it really makes a difference, not just in this generation, but for generations to come. Come visit us over at our website, theartofhomepodcast.com. There you can access all of our previous episodes. You can see into the homes of all the women that we have interviewed here on The Art of Home. You can snag a copy of Karen's award-winning famous chives bread recipe, among other things. You can also find links to all the resources we mentioned in today's episode. These things are all available in the show notes down below as well. Follow us over on Instagram. Make sure you tag us if you try any of the recipes or implement any of the ideas that you've heard here on the Art of Home podcast. And just another reminder to spread the word so that other homemakers can find us. Share with those you know, subscribe on your listening platform, and leave us a review. Do you have any questions or comments for us? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email to contact@theartofhomepodcast.com. Until next time, keep practicing your art of making a home.